Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
So we begin class 7 of 8 of opening your heart. And tonight we're talking about real human relationships. As I said, where the rubber meets the road. So the next week's class, so that'll be the last opening your heart class, and then we'll be starting on the precepts. The next week will be specifically on Sangha, this community. So real human relationships. There is a saying in Zen that it is easy to be enlightened on a mountaintop. It's easy to be enlightened when you're not interacting with anyone. And in a way, we all experience this in microcosm, right? It's okay to feel kind of calm when you're sitting zazen, and then you get up and then stuff happens. Or when you're at a retreat and, you know, there's find a way of being that, oh, it's so nice. And then when you get back to your daily activities, it's much more difficult. And the vast majority of this has to do with other people. So I was getting into a relationship way back when, and I talked to a Zen teacher about it, and she said something that I've always remembered is, people bring out the worst in you. And from a Zen point of view, this is a good thing. Right, because we could imagine, right, on that remote mountaintop, we could imagine, oh yes, I'm so enlightened now. And then, right, then like our mom calls, or like then somebody's, you know, rude on the road or something like that, and then it's gone. So I figured we'd do a little exercise. So you can pass out the pads and pencils. And you can give me one too. And we're going to do a little reflection exercise. You don't have to share afterwards. I suggest you just, you know, tear up the piece of paper. But I am hoping that you will share some of what you... Erica, can I have one?
Yeah.
Okay. Share something of what you reflect on, not in details, not like anything that's sensitive, but I'm gonna tell you what the exercise is in a moment.
I was distracted by that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, what do you want? I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So. So the exercise is to think of one, or two, or three, if you like, or however the mood strikes you. Think of someone who really shakes your practice. So these are real relationships, real people in your life. There might be people out there who upset you as well, but you don't have like a real human relationship with them. So these are real people who shake your practice, who maybe bring something out in you, something maybe you would call it negative or troubling, agitating, confusing, someone with whom you feel tension. And when we share back, you don't have to mention the person or the details, more of just what they bring out in you. So think of the people. So if you've written them down, now reflect on, for at least one, you can choose one or you can do it for more than one. What is it? What is it? What things do they bring up for you? What thoughts or feelings, reactions? what might be the source of tension in this relationship. What would you like from them that presumably you aren't getting, or what do you get from them that you would not like to get from them? I'm hoping some of you will be willing to share. You don't have to, unless you want to, you don't have to share the whole story, who this is and all the drama. I mean, if you want to, that's fine. But yeah, what, as you reflect on one of your difficult relationships, what kind of things come up? I can start. I have a family member who I would really love to, I would love for her to show interest in me, support for me, affection for me, but I don't feel that. I don't feel like it really mattered to her at all. And so I feel, in a way, befuddlement, in a way. Like, I'm okay. Like, what's the big deal? I don't, but also resentment and hurt, sadness. Isaac and then John.
So I found it interesting that two of the three people I listed have the same kind of theme going on, where it brings up the sense of longing, anger, and it's driven by wanting more connection. Mm-hmm. And then I also have self-anger kind of mixed in there too. And then the other person was anger, and then I actually would rather have distance from them. And then there's some self-anger in there as well. So,
thank you. John?
It's a long story, but I won't get into the whole thing. But I'm helping someone I used to work with who's mentally ill, put her life back together, got her in an apartment, all that kind of stuff. And then she spent all of her money. She got a dog. The dog uses the bathroom in the apartment, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm trying to do things to get her to understand what she's doing wrong, spending all her money, all this kind of stuff. And I mean, the other day, my goal was to bring a cleaning lady in, have her make an assessment, Linda to hire the cleaning lady and take care of the mess, get things back to square one so the leasing agent can come in and inspect the apartment. And also she gets her money. So we're going to go to the bank, get it out, pay all of her bills for the month. So she'll be good. And I didn't accomplish any of those goals. Very frustrating. She wouldn't hire the cleaning lady. She's just, who knows how she makes decisions. And it's just, I don't know. I feel like I'm losing my zen, and I get frustrated with her, and it's very, you know, I mean, I can see what's going to happen. She's going to be homeless. So there's just all this tension and feelings. And anyway, it's I don't know that I always handle things skillfully, but sometimes I'm thinking, well, I actually have to show my anger and frustration because maybe that'll get through to her. I don't know, but very challenging.
Interesting. Yeah. Yoli.
So it's so weird because this one person, there's a couple here, but this one person came to mind and I don't know why. And I'm like John, I'm feeling not very zenny about this because it's one of my neighbors. And she came up to me to talk to me over the weekend and I felt repelled and I can't understand why. I had such a visceral reaction to the point where I just felt like I needed to get away from her. And then she, for whatever reason, I don't know if she sensed it, because then she tried to get really close to me at another point during the evening, and I felt suffocated. And I don't know where that reaction came from. And I'm thinking I probably need to work on something, because one of the things our friend says, she says, you know, what your problem is you like everybody, but clearly I don't. So I don't know why this happened. So I'm a little bit perplexed. It just came into my head and it's there. So anyways,
I mean, I'm trying just to let people share, but what sprang into my mind is I was told by teachers who counseled me, right? So as a teacher, you end up meeting with people, and they said if you find yourself kind of repelled, that it's interesting information, and that sometimes there is something going on, like kind of weird boundary pushing that, but then we need to stop short of saying, oh, well, then that's a terrible person, right? Because there could be a lot to it, but like to kind of take it as like a little piece of information, like there really was something weird. Coral and Leah.
Okay.
All right.
We'll just find out who does. I hate to say this, but there is a personality type that I am like absolutely repelled by, and I don't really know how to describe it. And right now there's two people in my life, and it's just like every communication, everything they decide to say, and it's almost now I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say so I can be like, well, that's special. And I feel that like that they're condescending. I feel that they make problems out of nothing, and they feel like they're superior, and I just like I feel like wretched like thinking these things about these people. And I you know, I'm often like, well, what do I have issues with? Like, what about these like things that these people do irk me, and why? And I'm still working on that. But I don't know. I hate admitting it, but that is going on.
Do you ever, I'm not suggesting that this is the case.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I know that, because there's like a personality type that I have to say it's really sad, but it's women. Like, I think, I don't know if men are bothered by men more than you are by women, but I think it's kind of typical for women to be more like, my type in the monitor. And when I look closely at it, a lot of times it's like, I keep myself from doing that. Why the hell do you get to do that?
I think there is a little bit of that.
Kind of like, I try to stay humble and not talk about myself too much. And I try to like uh-huh. I have tried not to be that way. And here's a person just letting it all hang out, you know? And it just seems unfair.
100%. I do have to say, these are men, and I will, and I work, and I'm not saying that I work with these people, but I do work in a male dominated, so I deal with men all the time and their opinions. Anyway, yeah. Thank you.
Leah.
So here's how I will know that I have reached the mountaintop. is when I am able to deal with this person in my family, it will all be, it would be, it seems impossible. It just seems impossible. She's just a wall, absolute wall. This person in my family makes me feel cold-hearted, impatient, closed off, frustrated, and I just want to run away from them. And the source of tension is that this person is cloying, lonely, overzealously affectionate, grasping, wants love out of me that I can't give, but the two of us don't share any interest or background whatsoever. And then when I try to establish a relationship, what's frustrating, it's a frustrating part, is that she doesn't listen to me, so all conversations are totally one way, all about her, and she will just turn it right back around and be all about her. So even if there were a possibility for us to get to know each other, it would never happen because it would just be all the her show, all over, all the time. So I don't know. It's just like, I think about, well, I'd like to have hope that someday this will all change, but I highly doubt it.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Well, thank you, everybody, for making this all, you know, kind of come alive and be real.
Can I share?
Yeah, yeah.
Just because it wasn't on, it didn't come up in the topic. It's good for me to show myself to other people. My biggest one is powerlessness, and I guess it's associated with a very good friend of mine growing up, and the fact that people will willfully, or sometimes even unconsciously, like diminish their own light and their own goodness. Hmm. He was a real chronic alcoholic. During COVID, it got really bad too, to the point that, you know, he was drinking like a gallon of vodka in his bedroom alone every night. And at that point, the only thing that I could think to do was to remove myself from his life and be like, listen, you're going down a really destructive path. Like, I don't know what else I could take away from you. I just, you know, he ended up passing away, of course, and it was unfortunate. We hadn't talked for like a very long time, and I finally reached out to him just randomly. It was one of those very serendipitous situations. And I talked to him, and after not speaking to him for a while, I just honestly told him, I was like, listen, it's okay to admit that you have a problem that you can't necessarily get help for on your own. And he was like, it finally clicked, and he was like in rehab and all the way and doing the things, and he was in the PDX airport, like ready to fly to go to rehab, and wow, died from heart failure because he was so anemic. Mm-hmm. But I guess one tries to see positive in all life experiences and see what did I learn from this situation. I guess it's just that not a negative kind of detachment, but that you can't be responsible for anyone else's internal energies or the paths mm-hmm. that they choose, no matter how much you might love or care for them. Mm-hmm. And it is hard to deal with that sort of feeling of powerlessness when you want to be an inspiration, when, you know, you might feel that you have good insight. So, of course, you want to go out and help other people see better. Like, I mean, isn't that the essential aspect of the Bodhisattva path? Like, thank you.
Thank you. Yes, very good points, which I will hopefully cover. Yeah, why do people bring out the worst in us? You know, I think it's worth reflecting on the fact that we are profoundly social creatures. That it does not matter if you're introverted or antisocial or misanthropic, like, down to our bones, deep in our genes, we are social creatures. Our ancestors were driven to understand, to communicate, to read feelings in people, and am I okay with you? Do I still belong in this group? Do you still have my back when the predators come? Are you gonna share your meat with me? Like we, you know, I mean, this was like life and death stuff. And as little kids, and you know, you're hardwired to act in ways that makes your parents want to take care of you, and it's like this, all of this powerful stuff connecting us, and that's strongly within us, and including looking out for ourselves, you know, recognizing where somebody might be a threat, competing with other people for resources or mates or whatever. So this is a part of being human that we need to acknowledge and learn to practice with. So people have already mentioned some of these things, but just wanted to reflect on how we get into like karmic dances with people. So karma being all the causes and conditions that led to you being the way that you are. And your current state of karma is like, is also the cause of how you're going to act in the future. Like a lot of your past choices and experiences condition how you are and contribute to how you're going to act in the future. And then you get multiple people together with their stuff. And then we get weird dances, right? We get like, I'll act like this so that I appease you, and then you act like this. And like, I just remember when I first got into Zen, I was only 24, but I was, you know, engaged to be married. And I mean, I felt like already we just had these incredibly boring, dysfunctional, neurotic interactions that just neither of us could stop. We would just do this thing. And practice helped me like recognize that and slowly but surely, you know, find other options, other ways to be, to kind of step outside of that dance. And it's a very fascinating thing to watch when you've been doing that. And instead of like, okay, ordinarily I'd get mad, or I would withdraw and be silent, or I would whatever you think that you do. You do something different, and the other person's like, you know. We also have childhood karma, profound, I mean, good or bad, right? But if you have negative, I mean, I just experienced just a heartbreaking situation in a restaurant the other day. And the couple came in, they had two young daughters. And the youngest daughter looked like she was about between 3 and 4, maybe. As they're walking over to the table, she says, I want to sit by mama. So, okay, so she sits by mama and the older daughter sits by the dad. And over the course of the meal, I came to understand why she wanted to sit by mama. Like, the dad, I couldn't hear the details, but he was lecturing her about something like bouncing up and down too much, or I don't know what, eating with her mouth open or something. I mean, he was speaking to her in a way that like, she was just like crammed up against her mom, like with her eyes like this, just, you know, bewildered and filled with shame and confusion. And I just was like, oh, you know, that's the kind of situation where you just think like, oh, if I could just whisk you out of that situation. Oh, I mean, whew. So is that anyone who has that kind of experience, this isn't even like outwardly, I mean, certainly not physical abuse, I mean, but it's definitely emotional abuse, right? So if you've experienced anything like that, that is definitely gonna make relationships more challenging. Past difficult relationships we've had, betrayal, hurt, disappointment. Some people as mirrors showing us what we fear we are. You know, that kind of thing where like, if it's really irritating, it's probably something you do or are afraid that you do. So how do we practice with real human relationships? So Zen is not going to give you practical advice for how to make the people in your life act more like you want them to. And isn't that often what we're really looking for? It's like, I have this problem with, you know, this in this relationship, what should I do? It's like, how can I mean, not that you want to think of like making somebody else do something, but you want to try to convince them, or, you know, like if we just, this kind of weird delusion, like if I could just go home and I could just find the right way to tell my husband what I want him to do, he would do it. right? Like he would go, oh, I get it. Like it's this weird delusion. So really practice it is just about you. Your choices, your body and mind, your behavior. So it really has nothing to do with, I mean, it does and it doesn't, right? I mean, people are challenging. We test and enact this practice in real relationship, but the practice aspect of it has nothing to do with the other person. So the first thing is patience with ourselves. If you wonder why your practice and insights aren't showing up in your relationships the way you hope they will, or if there's at least a couple of them that you don't like, just, I feel like there's, we just wander around in this world, and even if for the most part, like we love people and get along with them, it's just gonna be somebody who's like our karma and their karma, not a good mix, you know? And it's just like, and that's very humbling. To just be like, ah, and then, I mean, somebody could show up here at the Zen Center and I could just be like, ah. And it could be very humbling to recognize, oh, I still have this reactivity. The human relationships, live, real human relationships, are the most difficult field of practice. It will be the last place that your practice, like, fruit shows up. But it's the most rewarding. Like, if it shows up there, it's real. So any improvements that you are experiencing in your relationships, that's amazing. That's wonderful. Pat yourself on the back and celebrate. I mean, I often think about like our ideal of the Dalai Lama, you know, just like, oh, he's so beatific and he's so loving and he's so compassionate. And you just think like, you know, how long would he be that way if he had to, like, you know, he was stripped of his robes and he was, you know, in the airport and his plane was canceled and everybody's jostling to get in line and people like it, surely even the Dalai Lama would just be like, nah, you know, at some point. So patience with ourselves. Then mindfulness and precepts. So we're going to be studying the precepts. Noticing our own behavior, our body, speech, and mind. Trying not to judge ourselves, but to see the patterns. Eventually opening up that option for a different way of acting. And when we experience anger, lust, competitiveness, envy, jealousy, a desire to see someone lose social standing and in our group. I mean, just the mean, nasty judgments that we have. I mean, I, it's in the stillness of retreat, you can, like, you know, experience some sweet insight, some calm, and then, like, it's just such a weird experience to then go to lunch and be seated across the table from someone and just find yourself thinking, like, your nose is so ugly. like it's like, what is this being? Like, I don't understand how it can be so small and petty at the same time. So what we notice in practice is that we're not defiled or defined by those thoughts and feelings, right? That they just arise like garbage, and, you know, you let them just float on by. We don't have to be overwhelmed by them. We can feel ourselves to be bigger than them. They don't have to dictate our behavior. And just because, just in passing, lust is a special one. And that's why we have a precept just for that. Lust isn't, well, you can do the whole, like, oh, I notice and I'm bigger than that, and, you know, just let it be. But I just want to say, it's like, maybe you've all experienced this, but if you, the sexual energy is like fire, you know, there's a lot to it. It's deep. It could be very enlivening, but it also can burn you. And if you don't want to play with fire and you don't want to go down the lust road, don't confess your attraction. That is like, I mean, who knows? Maybe the other person isn't interested and nothing is really terrible happens. But I just confessed, like, I was a practicing celibacy and preparing for ordination down at Tasahara, and I started to be attracted to a monk who was also practicing celibacy, and we just talked about celibacy, and sooner or later we got together. So, like, you know, somebody said that when I told this teacher about it, because I didn't want to go down this road. I was preparing for ordination, and she's like, "Well, why don't you tell them how you feel?" I'm like, "Don't." Okay. Then, mindfulness and precepts. Then acceptance. Letting go of stories that don't serve. Letting go of ideas about what should be. So we have stories about ourselves, we have stories about how good marriages should look, or how parents should be, how children should be. And they generally just don't serve. Every human relationship is different, every experience is different. And it can be helpful to adopt this little phrase, no one owes you anything. Now, for most of us, we think, well, but I've married this person and I've gotten, you know, now we're mutually dependent, therefore, or, you know, I've supported my child or my parent or whatever. So they do owe me something. I mean, if you want to think about that, you think about it that way, you can. But it's more helpful to think that they don't. There are many things we want. We want closeness. We want intimacy. We want... The list is infinite. But think about the difference in attitude. If I say you owe me respect, and respect should look like this, and you're not doing it, you are wrong. And I have reason for anger and resentment. When I tell you you are wrong, you might be crushed and cowed into behaving the way I want. You may dismiss me, or you may react with your own defensiveness and anger, now convinced I am wrong. No, you were wrong. No, I am wrong. You know, and this is the description of just so much tension in our relationships, whether the feelings are spoken or not, or just nurtured quietly over the decades. Many of you are familiar with nonviolent communication. So here's an example. So, you know, this whole, like, you owe me respect. I might say to somebody, when you sit, you know, during tea break, when you sit down, you know, like in the group that I'm sitting with, and then you get into conversation with a person and it's just exclusive, and then everybody starts ignoring me, I feel kind of sad because I'm disappointed. I want to make social connections with I'm here. When I'm, maybe next time, can you, I don't know, try to include me in the conversation. Like, that's nonviolent communication, which is entirely based on, you know, my vulnerability, my sadness, my feelings, and just a request, not a demand. So if somebody doesn't, if they go like, ah, Well, you've asked. You weren't going to force them anyway. And if people do follow through, now this is something, this is like actually the beginning of our relationship. But this is not, when I say no one owes you anything, this is not about becoming a doormat. We ask for what we want, and sometimes that can be the most difficult thing, challenging us to get in touch with what we really need or want. And setting boundaries. Setting boundaries, again, from a practice point of view, is all about you. It's 100% about you, not about the other person. So, you ask yourself, what can you tolerate? Versus, what will make your life unmanageable? And if you're, you know, as we've been talking about, if you're drinking or your negative habits or something are just, they're really making, I mean, and maybe, you know, if you're in a friendship, like the continued connection is just, I can't do this anymore. Maybe a relationship has to end. But it's about you, not about, like, in a way, setting a boundary for another person. So, a little meditation. So, I don't know. I don't know if this will work, but we'll see. So, you can close your eyes if you want. Choose one of the people with whom you have some difficulty. Imagine the two of you are sitting in comfortable chairs, not far from each other. It's a pleasant setting, neutral territory. Maybe you're sitting on a porch facing a sunset over the ocean or a lake. Maybe you're in a comfy cabin in front of a fire. Maybe you're sitting at a kitchen table over coffee or beer or wine. There's no sense of rush. No one else is around. Imagine this person, how they look, seated comfortably in their chair, fairly relaxed. Now imagine you and this person have the conversation or interaction that has always needed to happen. Don't worry about the content. Just notice how both of you relax. How you are able to see the other person as if for the first time. In themselves, not in relation to you. You become aware of their frailty, their desire to be loved and accepted. You understand why they've done some of the less skillful things they've done. Whatever has caused tension in you with respect to this person just melts away. You were just two human beings sitting together. So the last thing well, I'm sure it's not the last. Another thing that we can do to practice with our real human relationships is to try to discover our own Buddha nature. As when we do, our real human relationships are much less fraught. You're not looking to them to satisfy that deeper longing or fill that void. You can let people be themselves more. We can ask for what we want, but we don't have to have what we ask for. We have a few minutes left. If anybody has anything they want to share or reflect on or ask about. Erica.
I guess I was just curious. If nobody owes us anything, does that mean we don't owe anybody anything either? Because I feel like, you know, as a parent, there's a lot I owe to my kids, you know, or things like that. And so I guess, like, I understand the concept of that, but I feel like I still want to do things for other people.
Well, you still want to, right? And then there is vow. We make vows that we, you know, we're going to be there and all these things. So I guess you could call your marriage partner on their vows. But there's a way that maybe it's looking at, it's subtle. Looking at a matter of choice, because I could imagine a parent in exactly your situation with two rambunctious twin boys feeling trapped, feeling like, and now I have to just like open my veins and just you know, so that sense of looking at it as this is still something that you are choosing, that you can choose. I mean, the choices may not look that great, right? But yeah, that you are choosing seems to be a really critical piece to it. I mean, it certainly changes my attitude when I'm going about things, when I'm like, oh, you know, I've got this thing I have to do and that thing I have to do and that thing I have to do. And I read once a Zen teacher who suggested just flip the phrasing and saying, I get to go to the grocery store, I get to do my taxes, I get to, like, yeah.
Thank you.
And I guess it's just kind of a subtlety about that kind of, the sense of owing, the sense of entitlement that the sense of not having a choice, sense of being like wrong or flawed if you don't follow through on it. Coral.
Sorry. I know I already said something today, but when we did the meditation, I'm always hesitant to talk about my family members here because I want them to come if they're in town, and I don't want you to all like remember that thing I said about my mom. But like, I'm always working on the relationship with my mom. It's just like, I love her so much, but I feel guilty every time we leave each other's presence because I was such a brat the entire time. So I pictured her, and you're just like, those things you were saying, like you had a conversation. I'm like, no, we didn't. That's not how that would have gone. And I just imagine these things. Like the other day, I was kind of like talking her out of a habit that would easily get her scammed online. And she's like, I'm not going to do that. And here's why. And I'm just like, oh my God, Mom, I'm doing this because I don't care about you. Listen to me. Anyway, that whole meditation made me realize I should do this more often. I just have so much to work on in that relationship. And that was really humbling. Yeah.
Well, and that also brings up, I knew that in preparing for this class tonight that, like, I was going to be a ton of stuff that I just kind of forgot to even mention, but that kind of, Clark brought up of, I mean, what in Buddhist terms we put it, that people have their own karmic path to walk, and like this is where a lot of challenge comes in our relationships, right? Is where we try to help, we should try to help, and yet at what point are we not being effective anymore, or it's not helpful for us anymore, and like we have to just let people fall, and it's not fair, because like we love them and it's gonna hurt us too, damn it.
Yeah,
I mean it's crazy. I mean, I've, you know, my husband smokes like a chimney, and you know he's 75 and it's gonna kill him one way or another. And you know, when I first got together with him, I'm like, you know, why am I so, of course I wanted him to quit and all that, and he quit for like 2 weeks, and then like, and it, since then it's just like, this is like part of the frustration and beauty of human life, right? That we try to help each other out, and then sometimes we just have to watch.
Yeah.
All right, well, that brings us to 9. Dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Thank you, Tomio. Everyone, sweet dreams.
You too.